Unpack Your Knives and Stay. Yes, stay. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Top Crier podcast. I am the Top Crier, Haley Strong. I cry in every episode of Top Chef, the show we're talking about. Kurt Clark is here with me today to talk about me crying and also the show Top Chef.
Was this a crying episode?
I cry in every episode.
Right. But I mean, compared to last week's.
No, compared to last week, this was like, the Edinburgh Comedy Festival.
That's a very specific comedy festival. Is it because cheddar cheese is Irish?
Is it?
I'm making that up now.
I thought it was more of like an English thing.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, let me do a quick Google. Okay, tell us how you are, and I'm going to do a Google of what the origins of cheddar cheese are.
I am doing great. Seems like most of the things that... maybe I'm just thinking of Kerrygold, by the way.
Which
is more better.
But, that is Irish.
Yeah. And they do make a cheddar. No, I'm doing well, except most of the things I feel like as a taking up time on a podcast, just kind of rambling on my own, I kind of want to talk about food, but we don't do that till the end. So happy Father's Day to those who celebrate. And yeah.
To those who don't, happy Sunday. Cheddar is a variety. Okay, so this is from culturecheesemag.com/story/blog/sharp-story-origin-cheddar/.
Sounds legit.
Cheddar is a variety that most cheese connoisseurs know and love, or at least can appreciate. In the U.S., it's the second most popular cheese, just behind mozzarella. So how did cheddar come to be, and how has it continued into one of the most popular cheeses for centuries? Cheddar has a long history dating back to the 12th century in the community in Somerset, England. Its namesake, Cheddar Village, is a small town with gorges and caves that farmers used to keep cool or milk cool on hot days. The myth behind the cheddar is that a milkmaid forgot about a pail of milk in one of the caves. When she returned, she discovered the milk had hardened into the perfect golden goodness that we know and love today.
Golden goodness, though? Because I thought that we've learned that they add color, that cheddar is naturally white.
I thought they said in the episode that in England, where it originates, it is white, but
and I think
something.
And even we're saying, like, this is something I thought I knew going into the episode. And then in the episode, they were questioning, like, well, is white cheddar and yellow cheddar the same, except just without the coloring added? And Liam, the cheesemonger, said, yes, basically.
What's this place called again?
Tillamook.
Tillamook cheese. Okay. Is that like a popular cheese brand in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. It's a name I definitely recognized.
What's your favorite? Do they only do cheddar? It sounded like it, didn't it?
Yeah. And they saw there were some awards on the wall. Like they won some awards for like a Colby cheese, which I think is just a variation on cheddar.
Yeah, they have Colby Jack. They also have some yogurt and cream cheese. What's your favorite kind of cheese?
This may be a bit of a sneak preview on some of the food I had this week.
Ooh, interesante.
I actually really like a gorgonzola.
Nice.
Especially like if I'm just having a cheese by itself.
Yeah.
I like a good chunk of cheddar, but in terms of like pairing with things, I like a blue or a gorgonzola or a Gouda, and then goes down to like goat cheeses.
You like a very pungent cheese.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I'm surprised we didn't do a cheese podcast last summer.
I know.
One of my friends just listened to our pizza podcast with you, me, and Josh for the first time over this past week. And he was texting me about it, and there was something he said about, I just got a text out of the blue and it said, tell Josh that, pizza is not defined by intent. I'm like, I actually put two and two together pretty quickly. Are you listening to the pizza podcast from last summer? I was like, yeah. And then he said, he referenced, something about Haley/Jennifer or Haley/something. And I was like, it's Haley. And he's like, no, like there was like a waitress got her name wrong or something. Like, it's like another story that we told. It wasn't Jennifer. What that was it? Here, let me go back to the text message. He said,
"Yeah, tell me about this.
This is interesting to the both of us." And that's all.
Because once I podcast about something, like, it completely goes out of my brain. I have no idea what I've said.
Yeah, that pretty much tracks with me too. Do you have a favorite cheese as I'm looking for this?
I do. It's Swiss. I go hard for Swiss. I am a big fan of just eating cheese straight up. Like, I don't need anything else. I have a nice snacking cheese. Some of my favorite breakfasts include just slice and sliced cheese and like eating an apple with peanut butter. I really love cheese. It's a great time for me. I love a brie, which I will eat warm or cold. My grandmother made some excellent blackberry jelly like last year. And I've just, every time I have brie, I just slap that stuff on it.
Haley/Jessica, he referred to you as.
I
like referring to her original name before she got named after a pizza waitress. What it was. You were almost
I was supposed to be named Jessica. That is true. And then my parents, for the new listeners, my parents went to Pizza Hut one day and their waitress's name was Haley and they liked that better. So here I am. We never did a cheese podcast. I'm guessing because after we did the pizza podcast, you were very, very ill. So I don't think we ever wanted to go back to the well of like one singular food ever again.
Oh, there's like pizza's pizza for the most part. But it's like with cheese, like there's
we would try and eat 700 cheeses in the span of a week.
Well,
I mean, you would.
Yeah,
you would. You're committed. You're committed to the bit.
I would try to make. I would try to make every meal incorporate cheese. But the thing is, it's like pizza is like your meal. Like that's what you're eating.
Yeah.
With cheese, it could be like, you know what? I had a really good goat cheese and beet salad, mm-hmm. or you maybe have like a slice of cheesecake.
Oh, kill me! I love cheesecake.
You know, have like something stuffed with or covered with cheese, but it's not just going to be. I mean, technically, like pizza is an amalgam of things.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I guess that makes sense. Is pizza a casserole?
I've had people refer to deep dish pizza as a casserole.
Yeah, that seems fair to me.
And not as a pizza. Like, when I say my favorite pizza is deep dish, they go, "That's not pizza, that's casserole. What's your favorite pizza?" I'm like, shut up.
Our friend Kirsten McInnes has a theory that all foods are either soup or sandwiches. Is pizza a soup or a sandwich?
It would be a sandwich because it's like multiple things layered on top of each other.
Maybe. I thought it would maybe be a soup because there's like that saucy element. Well, a deep dish pizza would be soup.
I could see a deep dish pizza more being a soup. I see the saucy element of the pizza or normal pizza being more of a condiment than the
I don't totally agree with that. I don't think everything's a soup or a sandwich, but I do think burgers are sandwiches.
Oh yeah, they are.
But is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes.
If you separate the bun so that they don't connect.
Yeah, no.
Is it a sub?
I guess subs
are sandwiches.
Yeah, I say hot dogs are a subcategory of subs. No pun intended.
Our new t-shirts coming out never. Unless you want to make it yourself, is that just a subcategory on it?
Yeah. Subcategory is
Top Chef. Can you believe that this is a Top Chef podcast? We've been talking for 9 minutes, and I think I've mentioned Top Chef 2 times.
Because we jumped right to the cheese, but we kind of overlooked the whole Oregon Trail of it all.
Yeah. Tell me what you know about the Oregon Trail. I'm Canadian. This isn't in our history units.
Courses. You know what? I actually don't know a whole lot about the Oregon Trail. And I don't know. I can't remember.
Is it because you're not from Missouri or Oregon?
I don't think so, because like my U.S. history teacher was amazing. But we focused a lot on the Civil War. Like, I think that was also his like favorite topic to teach. I'm just trying to remember if we may have learned about the Oregon Trail. It just may also be that I'm so far out of high school that I forgot about it. I'd say when the first thing I do think of when I hear Oregon Trail is video game and dysentery.
Yeah, or like Aubrey on that one episode of Survivor Co. Wrong, which is funny because they talked about Survivor Co. Wrong in the Survivor throwback this week.
Yeah, I think I just listened to that reference either today or yesterday.
I am into this podcast. I'm so close to the end. I am 3 hours and 50 minutes and 36 seconds into this podcast. I have 1 hour and 6 minutes and 35 seconds left to go.
I'm 4 hours and 1 minute into it. So we're almost right at the same spot.
So close. Yeah. Like I'd say I have two more walks of this podcast left.
Yeah. I've been listening like to an hour a day, like at double speed. So I have.
I can't listen to things at double speed. So it literally takes me a whole week to listen to these podcasts. It's like the only podcast I'm consuming throughout the week because it takes me so long.
Yeah, I'm falling behind. Thanks.
I don't watch the season. Do you watch the season along with it?
No.
Yeah, I don't. We did, after I did the Survivor Africa podcast, Ethan really wanted to watch Survivor All-Stars. So we watched that. Ooh, that is a tough hang.
It's the bottom 10, isn't it? I believe.
I don't know. I have to go back. I really do have to go back. This is bad.
Because I'm like the person that did all the stuff. So
true. I listened to the couple like before mine, so I knew what to expect. I really should go back and listen to all of them. It was just like a lot of...
Number 24 out of 40.
Yeah, number 24, eh?
Hmm. What do you think? So you did... when you hear Oregon Trail, you automatically think.
I think the video game. When she referenced that on Korong, like I definitely had heard that before. I don't know if I personally played it. Like I think it might have just been either not as prevalent in Canada because it didn't really have to do with us, or it was just a couple years out of my realm.
Hmm. The funny thing is, like when I think of like long. Like marches, so my mind goes to the Trail of Tears before I go to Oregon Trail in terms of like arduous journeys, mm-hmm. I guess. But that's more about indigenous American forced displacement versus you know settlements and whatever the Oregon Trail is about. So. Anyway,
so they are our Top Chef friends are going on a trip. But first, they're going to do one last quick fire in their Top Chef kitchen. So they had to create a dish using only ingredients settlers would have had on the Oregon Trail. They couldn't go to the pantry at all for this. They had to use what was in front of them.
Like they couldn't use oils, but they could use lard. Like they had citric.
Lemons or anything. Yeah. They had some herbs, but there's like a little pop up in the Chiron that said like herbs weren't used for food. They were used for medicine.
Yeah. Which I thought was really interesting. I was trying to remember all like the different herbs that they had, but it was, and the meat had to pretty much be like, you know, dried or hard tack. Like you couldn't basically guarantee that you're going to have anything fresh because there was like so limited opportunity to get things along the way. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I was going to enjoy this much. I remember back in elementary school, we went to, it was like a wilderness camp, mm-hmm. where I think it was just like one day and you had to like live like pioneers.
A pioneer village. I think we have one kicking around here somewhere.
Kind of. Yeah. But this was at a local camp and some of our teachers had set it up. And so it was like, you did like candle dipping.
Okay. That's cool. Did you churn butter?
Yes, there was butter churning too. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Did you use a loom to make your own spread?
No, but there was the spinning of yarn, and not like spinning yarns like telling tales, but there was like the spindle and the mm-hmm. flannelin on the wool, and we didn't actually have to shear the sheep. But yeah, this is all coming back to me. But it was interesting. I wasn't sure what was going to come out of this because I was like, oh, there's going to be probably a lot of fish. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know how Kurt feels about just fish, but there was interesting fish, which is the cure for Kurt's fish boredom. So,
okay. Interesting. So Jamie won. She had pan seared salmon with walnut pepper sauce. Allegedly, she got an advantage in the elimination challenge. What was that?
Not entirely sure.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know what it was.
Oh, no, she got the 30-minute. She got the 30-minute bonus of extra cooking time in the elimination.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Cool. I remember that from my rewatch today. Yeah, unlike the last one with the black box episode from Top Chef France, where I was like, oh, what did they actually win here? But yeah, Jamie won an extra 30 minutes, which I think she spent helping the other chefs.
I mean, yeah.
We'll get to that.
Shota was in the bottom with his jerky cured salmon with parsnip and apricot puree. I liked the where he was going with this. I thought it was fun that he tried to make the bread like salmon and breading with jerky, but it didn't quite work out for him. Dawn was also in the bottom with her trail ride porridge with fire roast curry squash and hazelnut bacon relish. This didn't look good to me when she said she was like making the fish into layer. The porridge. I was like, not for me, thank you.
When you say it didn't look, you mean like visually appealing?
Visually and conceptually. Soundly.
Conceptually?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how do you make porridge sexy?
I mean, you don't.
I mean,
I'd say probably 2 months ago, I got this new oatmeal from Quaker. Do you guys have Quaker? Or is that a Canadian? Okay, cool.
The Quakers, I believe, were American. Although they came over before America was founded, technically. So I don't know anyway, go ahead.
I got a chocolate and sea salt oatmeal.
Interesting.
Which I thought was going to be great, but it was very salty.
Mm.
So I don't really want like a super salty breakfast. Maybe. I don't want salty porridge. I think that's it. I don't want salty porridge.
I have a salty protein. Like if it's, and well.
Yeah, but if I have bacon, I need to dip it in maple syrup because I need to balance out that incredible saltiness.
That's your Canadian DNA.
That's true.
Yeah. Was just looking because I was curious. The Donner Party followed the Oregon Trail. I was curious because that could have taken an interesting turn for available ingredients. But it turns out that they actually were slow. They elected to follow a new route off the Oregon Trail called the Hastings Cutoff. Apparently that was not a good idea. Mm-mm. So avoid the Hastings Cutoff.
That story I have heard.
Yes.
Gabe made campfire trout with Oregon Trail salsa matcha. This looked delicious and would be something I would genuinely order.
That was impressive looking.
Yeah.
That was like, I'm going to take the fish and just completely like unroll it. And that was impressive looking. I think of the four, though, I was actually torn between Jamie's and Dawn's. But Jamie's walnut pepper sauce sounded amazing.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
I like a good pan-seared salmon. I actually would have tried the porridge. They're between the squash, the hazelnut bacon relish.
If she just said, screw the porridge and made the fire roasted curry squash with that hazelnut bacon relish, I think that would have been a winner. Like, that sounds delicious. It sounds simple.
Maybe if you had then had, like, the fish could have still gone with that as well, potentially.
Yeah.
Like the porridge was a weird vehicle.
Yes, exactly. That's how I'm feeling about that, I think.
And I'm wondering what encouraged her to throw in trail ride as the descriptor for this. Like the Gabe's campfire trout, I can see that being roasted over a campfire, mm-hmm. the way he prepared it. And I like that we're back to a little bit of goofy Gabe here, like, because he like This is a lot of food. And I thought, I feel like maybe he's channeling Maria in terms of like how much he was putting out there. But he was like giggling, like, yeah, I know. And like, and it made me think back to last season a little bit with Brian Voltaggio, in terms of like one of the things that I'd hypothesized was that as that season progressed and the group got down to fewer and fewer people, Brian's personality came out a bit more and more. I didn't know if maybe he was an introvert.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And I'm feeling a little bit like that with Gabe as well, is in terms of like we're getting more and more of like him as a character beyond simply being a chef, as the just his personality is like becoming more and more exuberant as the show goes on. So I'm wondering if he's also a little bit introverted and if the smaller cast size is making him come out of his shell a little bit. But I think we might have cracked the nut on the hazelnut bacon relish and the porridge, and just get rid of the porridge and we don't need that. We can try everything else. But maybe it's easier as if it is truly trail ride, maybe the idea is it's easier to just kind of like eat it out of a deeper bowl if you're actually in a on a wagon train and you're trying to eat it. Maybe it's easier. Maybe the porridge makes it easier to eat versus the discrete components like on a plate if you're on a horse. I don't know.
Like a drinking porridge? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, you could just chug the trail ride porridge with all the components. throw it in a thermos.
You know how Campbell's has this like soup in a cup?
Yeah.
I guess like Quaker. Quaker, if you're listening to this, you better pay me for this $1 million idea. Drinkable porridge.
Yeah, it's a little bit like think like a protein shake almost.
Yeah, exactly. Quaker, call me. I can be bought.
I can't remember if Campbell's does it, but K-cup soups, where it's basically broths.
Oh,
like there's a bone broth K-cup. That I've tried before.
That's cool.
it was interesting. You don't get a lot of the, because a lot of like the liquid happens inside the cup itself. I didn't get any coffee flavor that was notable in the broth, which was good. But anywho.
So then they take a nice little field trip. They go to the coast, the Oregon coast. This looks beautiful. I'm dying to go. Like I'm dying to go to Oregon. The money that Travel Oregon has spent in this season has completely worked. I cannot wait to go. They took a trip to the coast, and this included a nice little field trip to the cheese factory called
Tillamook
Cheese Factory. This is cool. This is a lot of fun. I find it very interesting. I think the chefs probably found it very interesting.
You could tell from like the signs that they had up too, like there were like labeled areas of the assembly line describing what they do. So, you know, the place has tours all the time, except, you know, probably not so much during quarantine.
I also thought this space was really cool, like where they had the dinner and where they also had the judges table. Like I think that'd be a really cool event space. And I'm sure they use it for stuff like that. Like, can you imagine attending a wedding at the Cheese Factory?
No, I can't.
Okay, well,
I'm gonna be completely honest.
Okay, well, get in your brain. Cheese Factory wedding sounds bomb to me.
Yeah, I'm trying to see, like, as I mentioned in previous weeks, I'd been thinking about going to Portland for a vacation in early July. I opted not to, but I'm curious, how long a drive is it from Portland, Oregon to Tillamook, Oregon, where the Tillamook.
Okay. Well, let me Google map that.
No, it's an hour and 18 minutes.
That is not bad.
That's not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
And you go through the scenic Tillamook State Forest on the way there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's like half the drive is through the state forest.
Sounds truly stunning.
Yeah, so I was thinking, like, is the coast like 3 hours away? No, it's not even 3 hours round trip.
This is great. This is beautiful. Oh, this is so beautiful. Oh, what a thrill. What a thrill.
I was very confused for a moment because it looks like Portland is almost right across the river from Vancouver. That's Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, Vancouver.
I was thrown for a second there.
Oregon's a pretty big state. I think I guess I knew it, but I don't know. How long does it take to drive from Portland to Seattle? No, that's my next question. Let me just pop that in there. Seattle. It takes 2 hours and 44 minutes. That's not bad at all.
No, that's like from where I'm at to the Detroit area. So
yeah. Okay, now how long does it take to get from Portland to the northern Vancouver?
Probably not too long, because isn't Seattle almost right across?
Like 5 hours and 18 minutes?
Yeah.
That's not bad. Yeah, Vancouver is pretty close to the border.
You know what? There's probably a very nice train that makes that route, too.
Imagine well, that, I keep saying I really want to do like a train trip that takes me from Vancouver to like San Francisco.
Yeah, I did the train trip from Chicago to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Not fun.
Well, that's through like what one would call Portland.
I went to sleep in Kansas. I woke up in Kansas.
Nice.
Like we're still here.
Which of the flyover states is your favorite?
Which of the flyover states is my favorite?
Yeah. Have you been to, I feel like you've been to all, have you been to all 50 states?
I have not. I've been to maybe all, but, in the 48 contiguous states, I've been to all, but like three or four, really? I guess my favorite flyover states, it might be, does Missouri count?
I think so.
I didn't know if that was too far east. If we're looking at the north, we're looking at the North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, yeah, Oklahoma, Texas corridor of that call, and it can't really count Texas. Mm-mm. I would say, you know what? I would say actually say Kansas. The first time I moved back from Los Angeles to Chicago, I drove from Denver to basically St. Louis through Kansas, and I made that drive in one day. It was very just like rolling hills and beautiful. It wasn't flat, as flat as I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit more on the eastern side of the state. But it was actually very verdant and rolling hills, and it was just blue skies. So yeah, I would actually, despite me, I like driving through it better than taking a train through it. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've not been to North Dakota. I've been to all the other states I mentioned there. But North Dakota, I've not been through.
Right. Yeah, I've missed most of that corridor. I've been to quite a few states for Canadian, but not all of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think I've only been to Ontario and Quebec when you're looking at Canada. So
you're missing out on the East Coast, let me tell you
that. Yeah, I am. I want to go to Vancouver so badly. I know that's the other side of the country, but
did you know that Nova Scotia and Newfoundland are actually closer to Ireland than they are Vancouver?
I did not. Interesting fact.
I know, crazy, right? Anyway, the cheese factory, this is great. The challenge, I don't know if I totally loved at this point in the competition.
It was weird because there was one point we see. There's a point where Tom, after doing his walkthrough of the kitchen, has kind of like a speak to the camera, almost a Tom confessional about
it. I know, and I feel like we don't see those
it felt
often,
weird.
If ever. It did feel weird because it felt like they had filmed it before the cookery, too.
But to your point, it was almost like he was defending the choice to do this challenge. It was like, you know, a lot of people might ask, Haley, for example. Haley Strong, I know you're watching.
Hi.
A lot of people might ask, like, why we would like just have something simple like it, but you know, we want people to.
It's not that I disagree with a cheese focus challenge. I am very supportive of a cheese focus.
We were very excited last week when we knew,
yeah,
that the cheese focus challenge was coming.
What I have my doubts about is having to use cheddar 5 different ways, specifically cheddar, specifically 5 ways. I felt like if we did like a cheddar focused dish, like make cheddar the star of your dish, beat Bobby Flay style. Great. I love it. Genius. I feel like the constraints of being like, okay, I use cheddar here, I use cheddar here, I use cheddar here. Like that seems a little like clunky to me. And they got like not upset with Jamie, but they didn't love that Jamie's dish was, it felt disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like it's hard to make it not disjointed because you're trying to bring cheese in 5 different ways. Like, I think Shota obviously did the best job in that. I think making a dashi was just truly brilliant. But
and he kept the cheese as the star. Like, I thought that Gabe was, I mean, technically we didn't really have two tops here. Like, you know, Shota won, and then everybody else had like something that was maybe a bit off. And I thought Gabe was maybe going to be near the top. But apparently, like, the apple was more of the star than the cheddar. But it was all based on that one dish, which I would love to try. The where it was like the cheese souffle and, you know, the twill and all the other components that were three kinds of cheese. So it reminded me of my days working at Arby's. Not to, you know, go back to, again, last summer's podcast
series. I'm thrilled to go back to Arby's and you know that.
Where we had a, they had a triple, like a, it was like a triple cheese roast beef. It was like a, you know, cheese three ways. But and I always, it was like, I think it was a three cheese roast beef sandwich. And then I always joked that the three cheeses were sliced, shredded, and melted. But otherwise, it was all the same. I don't know if they should have instead had the challenge be feature an ingredient of your choice five ways. If they'd done that, we wouldn't have gotten to the Tillamook cheesemonger. I'm going to keep saying cheesemonger. So I don't know if they should have like conceptualized a different cheddar challenge, or if they should have like expanded the five ways thing.
I think they should have just been like, make a cheddar focused dish. Like, I want to know that this is a cheddar dish.
I wonder if that's what they were going. He said, to me, that does feel weird for a final four challenge though.
Like, what, a cheddar dish?
Like, I'm wondering if that's what it originally was. And then, yeah, this is like, I have no evidence, so I don't know why I'm going down this rabbit hole. It's like, maybe they wanted to do this earlier in the season, but because of quarantine, they couldn't get access to the place. Right. So they came in later, then they had to make it more complex. But you know, I would not have been upset at it. Make a cheddar dish. It does seem that seems a little bit simple for Final Four.
And I guess, but I think I like the simplicity because we really want to see what these chefs can do when more or less they're left to their own devices. I just feel like we could have got a better range. Like, I think I really was drawn towards Shota's, and I think the judges were drawn towards Shota's because he didn't really bother with the protein. Like, he had like some tofu, but it wasn't like, I'm going to make like a Philly cheesesteak or like a piece of fish with all of this cheese. And I think Gabe was like more successful too, because it wasn't like a protein heavy dish. There was some bacon, yes, but it wasn't like, I don't know. I feel like it was too constrained.
What about three cheddar focused courses where you're using the cheddar in three different ways across three different dishes?
I love that idea. I think that's brilliant.
And one is a mousse-bouche, an entree, and a dessert.
Yeah.
So you're kind of forced to think about it differently. Or,
yeah, I think that's perfect. Then you can use all of the different cheeses, and Tillamook could get their spawn money worth it to highlight a bunch of different cheeses. But I just, this felt, I don't know, it felt clunky to me, where the idea of a three-course meal, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, and maybe it's because I'm not a chef and I'm not well-versed in the versatility of cheddar, but like, I would have said when they kind of showed off and showcased that award-winning five cheese Parmigiano-Reggiano dish, I was like, well, those are like the five ways you can even use cheese.
Yeah.
Like, what else is there?
You sprinkle it, you souffle it, you cook it.
Grated.
Yeah, here's my cheese dish. It's grated cheese on a plate. I really wanted to let the ingredients sing. I used five different types of cheddar, so.
Sharp, extra sharp.
Yeah. Did they do Jamie dirty by like showing a close up of her eating all the different kinds of cheese?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I thought it was perfect. Okay, so what did they make? Shota made tofu cheddar manju with cheddar dashi, smoked cheddar oil, cheddar tofu miso, and cheddar twill. Did you know that cheese oil was a thing before this challenge?
I did not.
I was confused, but I was happy about it.
What was it I had? I can't remember if I was talking to you guys there, Dave. It was like, so basically grease.
You're right. I get cheddar oil when I melt cheese for my nachos.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how he made it. He made some nachos and then he like collected the oil from the cheddar nachos and then they used it in the dish.
Great. I love it. This was brilliant. I love this. All the judges loved it. It was no surprise to me that it won.
And the cheddar was like the star. I mean, in each of the other things we see, like he really, really, really focused on the cheddar. And especially, and the thing I've loved about Shota's cooking up, you know, throughout the series is that even if the challenge isn't something that is traditionally that he could like full tilt lean into the knowledge of, you know, cultural knowledge of his cuisine, that he knows how to adapt it. And I think that's what he did here is like, you don't see a lot of cheese in Japanese cooking, but he kind of was able to, he's like a fusion master.
He's truly brilliant. I love the way that he's able to make his food shine within the constraints of each of the challenges. And he mentioned the judging panel that he was coming into Top Chef, not really knowing how he was going to be taken or his food was going to be taken. And I'm so thrilled that Shota was here I love him. He's so good. Like, he's great. He's so fun. What a great character. What a great chef. He's like a perfect Top Chef contestant.
And this is, I think of the dishes, this is the one I would have wanted to try the most.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Absolutely. Gabe made cheddar oil, roasted apples, white cheddar foam, cheese curds, apple bacon, cheddar sauce, and cheese and apple chip. So I love the way that Gabe more or less went simple with this dish, like a very classic combination of apple and cheddar. But he elevated it, and I think this sounds delicious. But this is one of those dishes. I think Gabe's really good at like an appetizer and not necessarily making me a main.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever had, I'm trying to think if I've ever had like a cheddar apple combination. I know it's a thing. Like I hear of like cheddar slices on apple pie all the time, but I don't, and I'm trying to think of like, if like a cheese plate, if I've ever said, okay, here's some, I don't know if I've ever had the actual combination of apple and cheddar in the same bite. I would have tried the heck out of this. I mean, you know, the apple bacon cheddar sauce, like he did get some, additional protein in there. But the white cheddar, it sounded good. But he also used cheddar oil.
More importantly to me, he used cheese curds, which is one of my favorite variations of cheese. I really was dying to see some deep fried cheese curds on one of these plates because I love deep fried cheese curds.
I'm trying to think of like, could there have been like a poutine dish that featured cheese five ways?
Like a cheese gravy, cheese fries. Okay, I feel sick thinking about that. That's not to lie to you.
It's too much.
Having to eat cheese 20 different ways sounds like an absolute dream and a horrific nightmare to me.
By the way, the head cheese chef at the table, strong beard game on that guy.
Interesting. He put a lot of work into the lower facial, or like the lower hair rather than the upper hair.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm not lactose intolerant, but I do have to be careful with how much dairy I am consuming or else my tum-tum is not a happy camper.
I think this much dairy, everybody's tum-tum would not be a happy camper.
I there's no way I would have been able to make it through this entire day without throwing up. I feel the same way about that dessert challenge in Top Chef Kentucky, where they had to make like 12 desserts and they all ate them after midnight. I would have thrown up.
So just because I think we're at the same place in the podcast, I mean, Joe Del Campo, too much dairy potentially in addition to too much cheese.
Yes, I know. Because it's actually funny. That's one I've seen every episode of Survivor except two. I think it's like the second last episode of Survivor Australia. And that episode of Koh Rang, because I was away and I missed that episode and I heard what happened. So I just never went back to it. I didn't realize that like Joe didn't really eat meat that much. like before coming on Survivor. And I was like, oh, like no wonder his poor tummy just like was not thrilled.
So I wish Joe Del Campo had been a judge in this competition for this round. You notice that the moment they bring in a guest judge, it's like, well, you're in our quarantine bubble now. You ain't going nowhere. And they're like, they're now there for the rest of the series. It's like, it's like the opposite of Survivors. They keep adding judges.
I know. Like, I was pretty surprised to see Ed Lee come up a couple weeks ago, and I'm thrilled that he's still here. Yeah. Side note, what's his book called? It's one of my favorite books I've ever read. Just give me one second. I'm going to Google it. Buttermilk Graffiti.
Oh, cool name.
It's a really great book. It's really cool. I would definitely recommend reading it if you're into like food lit. Dawn, I love Dawn's concepts. Going simple. She's from the Philly area. She's basing it off of a Philly cheesesteak. To me, cheese oil based steak. Okay, do sign me up for a cheese oil based steak. Cheese sauté, cheese gougère, extra sharp reserve cheese foam, a sous vide, and cheddar sauce. What was their issue that like this? It was too muddled. That the sauce was kind of grainy and. And our good friend Brooke didn't get the gougère. What? Oh, I was like, I was secondhand cringing because I just.
And she looks
Dale
so sad.
Was mad. Oh, Dale was very angry.
How the F do you get this far in the competition and you're still missing things from the. Like, he was. Someone pooped in his cereal. It's like. Don't upset Grandpa Dale.
I know. And Brooke, I feel like I could see Brooke being like, no, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I just wanted it. Like, oh, don't yell at her. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, it was that. And then Richard pointed out, I was like, if you're going to make, like, if you say that this is going to be like an elevated cheesesteak, it needs to be amazing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it was good. It just wasn't, you know, all the way up there.
Yeah.
It reminds me, I think it was last week where, I think it was around Jamie's dish. Tom said, you know, it was in the last couple of weeks. Like, if I got this in a restaurant, I'd be happy. But this is Top Chef. You know, this isn't next necessarily. You know, this far in the competition, it needs to be better. And so I think that's the impression I got from the cheesesteak, and then also the missing element once again. But I couldn't tell if it was. Kind of implied or what, because, you know, is that something that Jamie missed?
No, I mean it's not Jamie's fault. Like, it's not Jamie's plate.
No, because you see there's they even do go back to
Dawn handing it off.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like grabbing the plate, handing it to the server, not even looking to see if it's on there. That's the point where she should have noticed.
But I feel like I do that all the time too. Like, I would always, in university, I'd always have to write papers, like finish them 3 weeks before they're due, because I can't proofread a paper I just finished writing. No. Like, I would have to come back to it. So I can totally relate to Dawn being like, that looks fine. Yep. And not even like totally taking in every single element, especially when you're trying to rush.
Yeah.
Do you think this should have gotten Dawn eliminated?
The missing element? No. Because it's not like, I think
Top Chef is very like, what have you done for me lately? They don't really look back on like a body of things. And I was wondering if they would be like, Dawn, this is literally the fourth plate you've missed something on. Like, it's unacceptable. You cannot continue. Or if they were just going to be like, well, we can't look at past weeks. Like, we have to take just this dish into account.
Yeah, I think. Just the structure of the tofu challenge was such that, because it was a voting element, and you like the challenge there was to complete, it was specifically around enabling the judges to vote, and she had done it in a way where that she made that impossible. So
I'm not even counting.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, I was thinking more from the lines of, should she have been disqualified in some way?
Oh,
and I don't think so, because I don't know if there's people out there making that argument or not. I don't think that apparently if her dish was better than Jamie's, then the right call was made. And it seems like that was the case.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Jamie made sea bass with crispy cheddar, cheddar spetzel, spiced cheese sauce, cheese broth, bok choy, and pickled cheese curd. I think one of the issues was that Jamie had too many sauces and they just kind of blended together, which I think is a pretty fair critique. I feel like the cheese sauce is probably the easiest way to go, but it's the hardest to like have multiple of. I loved Jamie's boldness of you know, using fish with cheese, which is something that, you know, we are told is not something that should be happening. But I think there's a reason we are told it shouldn't happen. I think that kind of happened here. I think she just had too many elements. And like I said, they just didn't really work together. They were just kind of separate things. And I think that it's the fault of Jamie, but it's also the fault of this challenge trying to make cheese five different ways.
And I think there was also this underlying implication that she was helping, and this came up, I think, last week as well, but she was helping so many other people that she was like, didn't end up having time for herself. Mm-hmm. And like she even said like, oh, I didn't allow myself as much time as I thought. Well, it's because you were helping Dawn. And I think you were also helping, you know, Gabe at one point. But at the same time, I'm wondering how much of that was, you know, last week she wanted to give up her spot for Maria to stay. And
you think her heart was maybe just not like super in it. Like she felt like she was coming to the end of the road and she'd rather help her friends have a better dish than like put the effort into hers.
I don't think it was that. I think the latter part that she wanted to focus her time on making sure her friends' dishes were a success is a possibility. I don't think it's because her heart wasn't in it. I think it's more that she was happy with how her story up to that point had turned out, and she didn't necessarily feel that she had a right to continue. And but she wanted to make sure that her friends had dishes. Again, just a theory. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it did
kind of feel like that. And it makes me sad. And I think I said this last week, it makes me sad that we like a lot of the women's stories on Top Chef, especially this season, have been like, I haven't felt good enough in this space for a long time, and now I'm not even sure if I'm good enough now. I feel like we rarely hear that from the male chefs on the on the competition. So it just sucks to hear that, but I'm hoping that these chefs are able to see that they are just as brilliant as everyone else in the room, and they're there because they are just as brilliant as everyone else in the room.
You're right. It's rare that we see that, like, a self-doubt in the male chefs, and it's completely understandable. I mean, in terms of like, you hear it as kind of it's seldom is just, I'm not sure of my capabilities. It's usually paired with a healthy dose of, you know, women aren't always respected in this profession. Like we hear tales of that all the time, whether it's, Dawn was talking about always having to prove herself. And,
mm-hmm. Or even like Kiki, who's constantly told in her career that her food wasn't respectable enough and she wasn't respectable enough. Right.
And especially, like, you know, pair that between if somebody is a woman and from another culture whose food is drastically different from American cuisine, then you're kind of like, okay, not only am I not respected because I'm female, but I now also have to prove that the food that I cook is worthy of a restaurant or worthy of being put on a menu. So it's, I can't even imagine. But I am privileged in that way.
Yeah. It's very infrequent that we see a lot of the white chefs like say that they were told that their food wasn't worth it or whatever. Classically French trained chefs coming in. Again, we've air quoted a couple times. I know the listeners can't hear that. I hope you understand our context, air quotes. A French chef will come in and yes, oh, they're brilliant, blah, blah, blah. And the Mexican chef comes in and it's like, oh, well, this should be this. And And it's hard for two white people to come in and say, like, this is what's wrong with the food industry, because we have not lived that. That's not been our lived experience. We can just kind of relay what we've been presented and what we've been told about other people's experiences. And then I think that's one of the reasons why this season is so important. We've had so many different voices, so many different backgrounds, so many different styles. And I think that's part of what has made this season so brilliant.
There was one Caucasian male this season in Gabriel. And like, you've got everything from Gabe as New Mexican American and Shota as Japanese American. And, you know, and that's just the, you know, just the tip of the iceberg with the men. And then, you know, I love the casting on the season. I think it's, I don't know. It's just not just in terms of, yes, in terms of the diversity, but also just in terms of the people. I mean, yeah. it's just been such a wonderful,
just great personalities, great, amazing talents. Like, it's just been such a lovely season to take in.
Like, even during the the quick fire, you saw like Shota was like prepping this salmon and he didn't need all of it. And so he just like tossed it over to Jamie. Hey, you need that? Like, it was like, there's just been like respect and sharing. Whereas I think you'd see in other seasons, like, there's no way that, you know, what's the other Voltaggio? Frankly, why is it that I remember Brian Voltaggio?
Michael. Not,
yeah. It's like, you can't see Michael Voltaggio necessarily doing that. But it's like,
no, I always think back to like Top Chef Las Vegas and just like how highly competitive that season was, and almost like in an uncomfortable way.
Jen would definitely not share her, you know, produce. I'm guessing.
Not then, maybe now.
Maybe now, yes.
I feel like Jen is different now.
She's a kinder, gentler Jen. Yeah. Gentler. Because she's Jen. She's gentler.
I see you there.
Yeah. So those were the dishes, eh?
Those are the dishes. And we say goodbye to Jamie here.
That's the last person in your draft team, Haley.
May it rest in peace, and no more whatchamacallit to have anyone come back. I love Jamie. I thought she was so great. I love that during the quick fire when she won, Padma did the finger guns. Like, I think she's made a real impression on the judges, and she's just like not a character we've seen on Top Chef very often. And I think it's really refreshing that somebody can take food like not super seriously. Like, it's supposed to be fun. Like, they are not doing rocket science. Like, they are making dinner and they're having a great time doing it. And I love, it just makes it more fun. It makes it a more fun show. It did feel like she was very content with her departure.
I thought when we first met Jamie, it's like that there was a little bit of stunt casting, not in the traditional term, but more like, this is a character that we've not seen anybody like this before. And I didn't expect her to last long. And here she is, final four. Mm-hmm. So, you know, color me wrong. But, you know, I like how she departs saying, like, I think even like Padma was like, or Greek, I think Gail was saying, you know, definitely going to, you know, check out your place in Vegas. And she's like, I'll get you all drunk and lit. Pew, pew. I'm looking forward to checking out Black Sheep when I'm down in a few weeks.
I'm really looking forward to hearing your takes on it.
Yeah. So we're down to final three now. And then apparently somebody else is getting eliminated next week.
Do you think so?
It sounded like it. I think they said like this elimination, that. Mm-hmm. I believe so. I mean, it would make sense to me because they're, I don't think that they would change, which makes me wonder then, like, would it have been a final three?
I think so.
If someone had come back from Last Chance Kitchen.
I do think so.
But did you watch the previews?
I must have. I just can't remember.
They're basically like knee deep in the water looking for Dungeness crabs.
Oh, yes. Okay.
James Beard episode, it sounds like.
I love crabs, so I'm very excited about that.
You love lobster. Red lobster.
I do. I love a crustacean. What can I say?
Good time.
I was slightly inspired this week. I did make the cinnamon babka on Monday, like I was talking about. It turned out really well. I was happy with it.
Did I see your cinnamon babka or did I see Bryce's cinnamon? Did you inspire Bryce?
No. We had both talked, like, because Bryce said on the podcast last week that he was going to make a blueberry babka. And I was like, That's so funny because I'm planning on making a cinnamon babka tomorrow. It turned out well. I did buy some new yeast recently because I had tried to make a focaccia a while ago and it didn't rise. And I think my yeast was broken. So I did buy new yeast a couple weeks ago and made the babka, and it turned out really well. The last one I had made had chocolate in it, so I just stuck to cinnamon. Because Ethan prefers he loves like cinnamon stuff. So I was like, I think he'll like this. The recipe, I didn't realize it made for two loaves. So I actually did some light experimenting because with the second rise, it said an hour or two, and I only have one loaf pan. So I did
cram them both in there. Just double
up. I know. So what I did
double
was
stuff Oreo, but a double stuff vodka.
Next time I will do that. I made one and let the other one rest for an extra hour to see if there was any like difference. I'm not sure if there was, if I'm being honest with you. I think it was good though. I enjoyed it. And then this week I also made another cinnamon dessert. I don't know if you've ever heard of this because I hadn't heard of it before, like a couple of weeks ago, one of my coworkers had given me a little
Cinnabon. Tell me more.
Yeah, Cinnabon. A little loaf of Amish friendship bread.
I think I've heard of friendship bread.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard of it in the context of the Amish. And I couldn't tell you what friendship bread is.
And then later that week, my best friend had given me a bag of Amish friendship bread starter. So it has a starter. And so you leave it on your counter. For the first 6 days, you squeeze the bag. Or for the first 5 days, you squeeze the bag. And then the sixth day, you add a cup of flour, a cup of milk, a cup of sugar. You mix it all in. You leave it on your counter for another 4 days while squeezing the bag. On the 10th day, you make the bread. But you add more. It's an absolute F ton of milk, sugar, and flour. Let me tell you that. And then you take 4 cups out. In each cup, you put in a separate bag, and then you're supposed to give the starter to other people.
Oh, it's like a chain letter. It's like a chain letter, but with food.
Exactly. And let me tell you, and it makes a ton. I only have one loaf pan, so I made one loaf of this bread, and then I made a tray of muffins. They're delicious, but it's truly too much effort for me to do on a regular basis, because you're supposed to make this bread every 10 days, right? It's so many ingredients, and you run out of people to give this effing starter to.
It's like the pyramid, right? Like a pyramid scheme of cooking.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly. It's a pyramid. It's like an MLM. Like somebody's trying to force me to buy. Anyways, it's delicious bread, but I'm never going to make it again. If I want it, I'm going to buy it from somebody else because I'm not doing this again. I'm not going through a week and a half just to end up with more effing starter. Like, you're supposed to make this bread every 10 days. I'm not doing that.
It's hilarious that the thing I've heard you get most upset about during your food discussion is friendship bread.
I know. Well, the worst part is it's delicious. It's lovely. It's a wonderful bread.
I'm extremely upset that I was given it.
But it's just, like, it sounds bad, but I was like making it. I was like, I can't believe I'm making this bread. Like, what am I going to do with all these starters after? Like, I don't have any friends. Like,
if I don't cook it, I have 7 years bad luck.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like I gave one to my mother-in-law and I was like, I don't care if you don't make this. I need it out of my house.
And you're not allowed to give it back to me.
Do not ever give me Amish bread starter again. Because I made it out of because my friend had given it to me. It was like, well, I have to make this. Like, I don't want her to be like, hey, did you ever make this bread? And I go, no. Like, again, I don't want that 7 years of bad luck. Apparently, you're not supposed to put it in the fridge, but you're allowed to put it in the freezer.
Okay.
So I'm thinking of freezing it. But again, I'm never going to make it. Again, it's just going to live in my freezer forever. Because I don't want to have to deal with the possibility that I have 4 more starters that I have to give away. I don't want to go through that. And I can't even, like, make it for my grandmother because there's, like, 3 years worth of milk in this thing, and she's lactose intolerant.
I don't know if it'll outlast grandma.
It's unsettling to think about milk on my counter for 10 days, is it not?
A little bit, yeah.
I need a clean counter. I'm one of those people. Okay. I'm not always tidy, but I can't really function in like clutter. So I don't like when my kitchen counter, Kurt, my office right now is cluttered and I'm just like staring straight at the screen so I don't have to look at the mess. Anyway, I don't want bags of goo on my counter.
It sounds so appealing though.
Anyway, I'm going to give it to one of Ethan's aunts. One of my former bosses wants some. And I just might, I don't know, burn the last one. Like, I don't know what else to do. I don't want to ever make.
Burn it with fire.
Like, I don't ever want to make this again. As good as it is, I never want to make it again. And I tried to find a recipe that, like, you wouldn't have leftover starter. Because you're using just an absolute S-ton of milk, flour, and sugar for this effing bread. And I just don't want to go through all that and, like, every 10 days. I have to do this 3 times a month.
This is your best friend that gave this to you.
And she meant well. She did this out of love. But it felt like an attack.
Does she listen to the podcast?
No, God, she no. I'm not. Jessica, if you're listening to this, I love you. Thank you for this gift and an Amish starter bread. Never making this again.
Wait, she stole your birth name?
A lot of people were named Jessica in 91, let me tell you. You could throw a rock and hit a Jessica in 1991. So that is what I, long story short, that's what I made, and I will never make it again. Again, it's delicious. I can't wait to have a piece after this podcast. I'm not making it ever again. Yeah, the pain is too deep. It scarred me.
It's also too soon. Like it's 2 weeks from now.
Every 10 days? I'm not squeezing this bag every single, I'm not taking time out of my day to squeeze a bag. RHAP out of context Twitter, you know I love you. Do not take that. Do not put that on your Twitter account. They're really good at listening to me about that.
Yeah, okay.
I don't even know what else I made. What did I? No, it's hard because I work till 6 and Ethan works still, like, he gets home at 5.
And then nighttime is friendship bread time.
Well, yeah. Dude has been eating a lot of cinnamon based breads lately. But he's living his best life. Dinner. I don't know, but I got my latest issue of Food Network magazine this week, and in that was a falafel burger recipe that I really want to try.
Interesting.
Like, instead of a burger patty, it's just a patty of falafel, which sounds amazing to me. So I think I'm gonna make that tomorrow because my days off are Sunday and Monday this week, and so it's nice to have that Monday to like catch up on chores and actually do stuff, you know what I mean? Anyway, what did you, sorry to absolutely derail this, but what did you have this week?
I almost forgot, but I actually made burgers a couple of days. I got 4 patties from the store, the pre-made, they were like pre-formed with like, I think, cheddar and bacon in them. So I brought a couple of some brioche buns.
Like Gypsy Lucy style, or are they like?
No, they were like, no, not like a layer inside, but like chunks.
Have you ever had a Gypsy Lucy?
Yeah.
Do you like them?
I like the concept. The 2 or 3 I've had have not delivered on what I've expected in terms of like gooey center.
Yeah, I've never had one, but I just, and which is weird because I love burger and I love cheese, but I just want them to be like separate layers, I guess. I don't know. I should try one.
I like the idea, but I had one in Minneapolis, which is where I believe it's originated. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, because like, oh, this, I'm not getting anything different from this. But then I sprinkled, I had a couple, one, I had like a couple slices of thinly sliced cheddar on the burger. And the other one, I had like a shredded Swiss Gruyere blend. Mm. And then I did some tasty takeout pizzeria near me. I got this Italian sub that was amazing. I think it was more like the condiments just made it amazing. It was like your typical deli meats, but it had like mayo and jardinera and I don't know what else, but it was just so tasty. I also got, are you familiar with Pepadus?
No.
They're like kind of round, like picture I'm like a pepper, but it's like in the shape of almost a largish cherry tomato. They're not too spicy. They're more along the lines of a slightly tangy bell pepper. But they were hollowed out and filled with blue cheese.
Sign me up for that.
Which was tasty. And then I got something, it was just called, all the menu said it was a pancetta pinwheel. Did not know what this was. And I was expecting something that was going to be like a ham roll up with maybe like a cream, like a cheese or something.
That's what I expect when I hear
it. It was like a pizza roll up. Like it was like, it was actually a lot of, it had bread, which I did not expect.
Right.
I also, let's see, yesterday got the pickle pizza, which I've talked about before. Mm-hmm. And I got the, a lobster quesadilla, which was with white cheddar, which was quite tasty.
Where's that from?
There's a Social House, Grand Rapids, both were from there. Socialhousegr.com. But I think actually the big thing this weekend is like I threw a bunch of cooking competition shows into the DVR.
Nice.
I saw a tweet from Will from America talking mm-hmm. about how he thinks MasterChef has the best competition elimination structure of any competitive reality show.
Okay.
And so I missed the first few episodes. And so I threw that into the DVR. Watched the first episode on demand. I've never watched MasterChef before. I think my aunt went through the audition process and she was in the audition episode and did not make it past that. And so I've like not watched it in solidarity since then. So I'm going to catch up on that. And then I was watching that and I saw that Hell's Kitchen was back, which I had missed. So I'm watching that and I've not watched that in a while.
I've never watched it. So it comes on right before The Bachelor. So I actually texted a friend of the podcast and me, Emily, the other day being like, have you ever watched this? Like, what's the scoop here? And she's like, no, I have not.
It's a lot of yelling.
That's what I thought. And I don't love yelling because I'm very delicate.
And then my mom pointed out the show to me. She's like, yeah, Joel McHale's hosting this new competition cooking show, but it's like a mystery and like something about murder. And I'm like, what? So I looked it up and I didn't realize. So it's been on for 5 weeks now. Crime Scene Kitchen.
What? I have not heard of this.
It's on Fox and I absolutely love it. It's like my new favorite show. So there's like a kitchen and these pairs of chefs, there's like six teams. Each pair has like 10 minutes to explore the kitchen. And based on the clues left around the kitchen, they have to figure out what dessert was baked in the kitchen. And then they have to go back and create it. And so
this sounds like a very curt show.
It's like there's some dishes in the sink that have like the, oh, that's definitely a buttercream. Or that's definitely lemon rinds in the garbage, or there's parchment paper, but note that there's like these little dots of chocolate that are 6 inches apart. So we think that this is like potentially like the length of whatever it is that we're making. And the fact that there's two dots means that maybe it's an eclair. And it's funny because so each of these six teams independently bakes what they think the judges are. Curtis Stone, Joel McHale is just kind of the host. And then this food blogger, influencer who I don't know. But you'll be when they come back, like these three people each make a Black Forest cake, but then these two people thought it was a red velvet cake. And then you have like one team that made like donuts. And so in the first round, basically if you're the only person who made the correct dish and it was really crappy, you still win. And so it's funny, my favorite part is like watching somebody come up with their Black Forest cake, and the other people who make Black Forest cakes are like kind of nodding their head, and the other people are like looking at each other like, how did they get Black Forest cake from that clues there?
That is cool. I have to check this out.
It's so good. And it's like, and I think actually Joel McHale is a really good host for it. Like I'm really taken with it. Especially because it'll be like, I'm Italian. There's no way that this is a cannoli that was being made. And then meanwhile, like, you know, four other teams are making cannolis.
Do you, the viewer, know what they're supposed to make?
Nope.
Okay, cool.
And then they don't know what each other are making. And then they each present their dish to the judges. And then the actual dish is revealed. And then they walk through how you should have gotten this. And it's literally like if there's like shredded coconut in a bag on the counter, but it wasn't opened. So that was meant to throw you off.
Yeah.
And so there's strawberries and raspberries in the fridge, but the raspberries were clearly a partially full container, or like the, there was like a bunch of bottles of alcohol, but only the seal was only broken on the rump. And, or like there's like a little bit of dusting of cinnamon on the cinnamon shaker and everything else is clean. So, you know, the cinnamon was used. So you have to kind of like piece the things together using that. And then you have to know how to make it.
Yeah.
Like there's one where they said marzipan and I immediately like, I bet it's a princess cake. That's the only thing I know. And it was, spoiler alert.
Excellent.
So but you only have to know like what it is. You have to then also know how to make it. So like these are like, people who know their way around like baking in a kitchen. So I told Bryce to watch it. I was like, it's actually really compelling. I'd recommend it. Anyway,
check that out. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I've been enjoying it, but that's about it.
Where can people find you on the internet? If you want them to find you on the internet,
I am at Kurt Clark, CURTCLARK. So there's no confusion there. Two C's. This past week, Thursday, recorded our Whodunit retrospective on Rap Rewind with.
How did that go? How was it?
Good, good. It was like, so. It was fun revisiting it with Rob, and Chappelle had not seen it before, and so he just watched episode 2 of which is where we were kind of focusing on, and he had a lot of questions, which reminded me of like the first time we watched it. Rob and I back in 2013, there were a lot of questions that came up. So it was fun. It was fun then also just seeing on Twitter, like everybody who was excited about, you know, going back and rewatching that, or like there are a lot of people who that was like one of the shows that brought them into RHAP. So
I feel like I listened to the podcast, but I didn't watch the show.
There's a lot of people, but they're all the episodes are on YouTube.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to have to check that out too. I've got a lot to watch lately.
It actually holds up well. Like I pointed a friend to it and she was like, oh, when's the next episode come out? And I'm like, no, this aired 8 years ago. And you can't really tell.
Okay, cool.
So it's highly recommended. But yeah, that's the main thing I got going on. How about you?
Bachelor is back in full swing, baby. So I'm podcasting about that here on the Wrap Ups Network with Amy. We're having fun so far. I'm nervous about where the season's going to go. If it's going to continue to be fun or not. But we'll see. We'll see how this goes. Other than that, I don't know what else I'm doing. I don't think I have anything else like regularly.
H Strong underscore
on Twitter and Instagram, at the Strong Library on Instagram. If you want to check out what I'm reading, which I haven't posted anything in a while because I'm currently reading a book. I'm reading a series. You might actually like it. I think it's the Shadow and Bone series there. It's the show's on Netflix. So I'm reading the second one of that series.
I've not read it, but last year or the year before, I read a different book by the same author called The Ninth House.
Yeah.
Which takes place, I think, on the campus of Yale or Harvard. That's kind of this idea that there's like these secret society clubs, mm-hmm. which we hear about in like lots of the Ivy League schools, but some of these are actually another layer of secret. Like there's like this mysticism or supernatural elements too. So I do like the author. I've not read the Shadow and Bone series.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm having a nice time. A nice time. I don't know. It's like dark, but not like, I don't know. It's not like, I feel like an older teen could easily read it. I like a YA high fantasy more than like an adult high fantasy.
Right.
And I like a rom-com, obviously.
Nice. Cool beans.
What have you read lately? You always post your books too.
I'm reading a book that I bought like, gosh, 6 years ago. It's a series called, the book's called The Janus Affair. It's the second book in the series. It's like something about peculiar occurrences, something or other, Society of Peculiar Occurrences. But it's like set in the 1890s in London, but it's very bit steampunk, and it's about this division of the of like the London government that is responsible for investigating the supernatural. And this plot revolves around the suffrage movement in London. But many of the lead women in charge of the movement are disappearing mysteriously in flashes of electricity. So it's kind of like a fantasy element to it, but it's also a little bit historical fiction, but like in a history that's never like, you know, there's clockwork robots and airships and stuff, like your typical steampunk sort of thing. But
yeah,
it's pretty like I've had this for, gosh, like at least, want to say 5 or 6 years. I'm finally digging into it. So
I know I have a big pile of books that I really need to get to, but a friend of mine had lent me these ones, so I feel like I need to read them first.
And I highly, if you love books, I highly suggest following hashtag library porn on Instagram.
I followed it because you told me to.
There's some beautiful, beautiful libraries out there. If you like books.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that's it. Look at us go. An hour and 14 minutes. This is the longest podcast we've had in a while.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time talking about cheese.
I mean, welcome to the Top Cheese Podcast.
There you go. Big cheese.
Pack your knives and head on out. Bye. I love you. Bye. 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 Bye.